What do the Wild West, the Roaring Twenties, and the Mod 60s have in common? Well, they're just some of the design settings for Shakespeare plays in the contemporary theater. And joining me to discuss design in contemporary Shakespeare productions are Brian Isaac Phillips, the producing artistic director of the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company, and Amanda McGee, the resident costumer of the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Hi.
Brian, let's start with you. You direct frequently for the company and a good hand at Shakespeare directing.
Sure.
And you've chosen a number of different concepts behind the settings of the Shakespeare plays. What is it about taking Shakespeare and translating it into a different setting?
Well, one of the things that I think is most important is deciding what's going to best serve the play and best serve the audience that you're having a dialogue with. So we will do a wide variety of programming back and forth between more traditional design setting and very contemporary design setting. And it's part of it is based on what did we do the last time that we perhaps produced that play? So what's going to be new and exciting for our audience and artists? And also what is in the play that might speak to how we're living as a society right now, and what can we do with this play that can help address that. But at the end of the day, anytime you're going to choose a concept or a contemporary setting, that has to support the text as opposed to using the text to try to support some concept. So if it is a crazy and imaginative idea, if it's actually going to be in conflict with the text the entire time, we will tend to do a more traditional approach.
And from your standpoint, which usually comes first, a selection of the play and then consideration of the setting? Or do you have sort of a collection in the back of your brain of plays and settings you'd like to work with?
I think selection of the play ends up coming first. And then there's a conversation with the creative team and with the directors that are candidates for positions that coming season about what they want to do with it. But with only 38 plays to choose from, only, that's plenty of plays to choose from, you have a certain schedule with how you move through them. And sometimes a play is going to move to the front of the list because of what's happening in our world today. And sometimes you're saying, look, it's time to do Winter's Tale again because it's a beautiful play and we haven't done it in a while and we just have to do it.
Now, you mentioned the creative team. So it's you and about how many other people usually?
Oh, goodness. At Cincinnati Shakespeare Company, there's myself. We have two artistic associates, and then we have our resident costume designer and the costume shop that works with Amanda. We have a resident scenic designer, a resident lighting designer. We have a production manager. We have a production stage manager. We have a resident sound designer. We have a props slash assistant stage manager. So it's a massive crew getting the job done.
And they all have to come into full agreement on the concept.
Or close to full agreement. There's some of them we can push towards.
Okay, so Amanda, have you ever had to be pushed in that direction, or are you pretty eager to take on challenges of new settings?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's always exciting to try something new. But yeah, sometimes it takes some encouraging, but I think it's all down to finding some sort of visual key that ties it all together. You know, if there's one piece of visual inspiration that we can all agree on, we can usually find a way to connect to it and make it happen.
Now, in Shakespeare's day, they used to just perform in contemporary clothing of the period. And if they wanted to suggest sort of an exotic or far-off location, they might throw on some fabric to make a toga or add some sort of reference to the culture. But in today's imaginings of Shakespeare's plays, it's a full-on press. So when you're approached with a design concept, where do you start? What do you do?
Well, I agree with Brian that a lot of it is about what's going to serve the play the best. And more specifically for me, it's about character and the stories that these particular characters are trying to tell and what's at the core of their being. And once we find that, then we can kind of start fleshing that from the inside out and figuring out who they are, what they look like, and where they're coming from, where they're going, their journey through the play. And we start there.
When you see images of plays done in Shakespeare's day, oftentimes you look at them and you say, oh, everybody's dressed the same. But that's not true. There were clues to the characters based upon the culture of the time. How much research do you do, like if you're approached to do Much Ado About Nothing in World War II?
Well, yeah. I mean, if we're going with World War II, yeah, we'll start with those visual inspirations. Not only the uniforms of the time, but the civilians of the time as well, and seeing how that would vibe. But I think what I would first do is figure out, you know, maybe Shakespeare's original intent. How were they doing it back then? And that would give me a clue of how to do that in a different setting. But I think most of the time, even if we are setting it in something like World War II, we're really trying to adjust to a modern eye a little bit and trying to see what is attractive to our eye now. And if someone in our modern audience sees a World War II uniform, are they going to know right away what that is?
You know, something, Jim, that you said that I think is really important and has been a bit of a constant conversation, not just for us, but I think nationally with Shakespeare companies, is that when you do a more contemporary setting for a Shakespeare play, you'll tend to hear some audience members say, well, that's not the way Shakespeare would have done it. Why aren't you doing it the way Shakespeare would do it? And the answer to that is that's actually a lot closer to the way Shakespeare would do it. Exactly as you said, they would be taking clothes out of their closets at that moment to wear on stage and then maybe add a piece of flair to suggest character or an exotic set. But the idea of pumpkin pants and doublets and tights and everything, that is now a more traditional Elizabethan setting, but not true to Shakespeare's original company and intention.
In fact, during the time, there were some laws that kind of constricted what they were actually allowed to wear because it was sort of being uppity if you wore something nicer than you should have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, we talked about the creative team. Amanda, when you're working on a show that is set in a different period, how closely do you work with the other designers in terms of concept and where you're going with it?
Yeah, you know, a lot of our worlds collide when it comes to color and texture, and so we're definitely communicating about that and trying to make sure we're in harmony. But I think where I get really excited is when we start talking about metaphor, you know, when we're trying to find what's at the heart of the play and what is the big dramatic question that we're asking and how do we make that come to life on stage. And so I think that's where, you know, specifically scenic and costumes can really collide and make something that is really dynamic and powerful. I'm waiting for the day that I can collaborate with a sound designer. You know, I think that would be really, really fun somehow. And lights are incredibly integral to what we're doing costume-wise. And the lighting designers are really our best friend as far as like making us look really, really good and really controlling what our eyes are looking at. So
I think a fantastic example of what Amanda's talking about is what you can see on stage now with Julius Caesar and Antony and Cleopatra here as we close the season. And that is, it is a more traditional Roman epic setting that we're doing. However, there's a contemporary influence. There's a lot of metaphor about what serves the characters best and how we can tie ancient Rome into a modern sensibility that a contemporary audience can easily recognize. And the work that has had to go in place between Amanda and the resident scenic and lighting designer for this production, Andrew Hungerford, is essential to telling the story visually. And it's a great example of that collaboration.
Of course, a lot of audiences, when they see something non-Shakespeare in a Shakespeare play, it makes their imaginations run rampant. Do you have patrons, like after a performance, come up, that was really cool, I really like that. You know what you should do? You should do this play in this period.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I kind of like that sometimes. You know, it keeps me fresh. It keeps me working hard. And I want to know what they're looking at and what they're noticing. So I encourage it.
Yeah, I think it's always great. It's part of what I think is important about the role that we serve in the community as far as wanting to feed a dialogue about what the classics mean, what they can mean, how they affect us in contemporary society, and having an audience that is engaged in wanting to see plays in different periods or seeing something contemporary and saying that that one would be so much more impactful for me if it was more traditional. That's part of that give and take that you're having with your audience, and hopefully you can't make everybody happy all the time, but over a long-term relationship, you're hopefully providing an artistic conversation that everybody can feel like they're a part of.
And I have to confess, sometimes I feel like I make design choices because I do want to stir conversation. I don't want it to be a museum piece. I don't want it to look like we're taking ancient Rome and putting it on stage. I want to create something that talks more about character in the story and relates to modern times a little bit. So it's not always going to be historically accurate, and I'm okay with that.
Amanda, the big question. Is there a play in a certain setting from the canon that you would really like to do eventually? Are you listening, Brian?
I'm listening.
I would really love to do a Lear, but I have to say, I'm kind of living the dream already. I mean, Romeo and Juliet was one of my favorites, and I got a chance to do that one, and Midsummer and Twelfth Night and all of those that I'm already in love with. So I'm just looking for the next one to fall in love with.
Now, we've talked a lot about designs for concepts in other periods and settings, but let's talk a little more traditionally, Amanda. This is something that a lot of people always ooh and ah over when they see something done in an actual Elizabethan presentation of Shakespeare, and that's the fabrics, the variety of them and the richness of them. Can you tell us a little bit about the fabrics that you use when you approach a more traditional design?
You know, we're looking for something that has a lot of depth and color and richness to it. It's hard to find those these days. And I think whenever we're doing something traditionally, we're probably going to look at people who have done it in the past and borrow what they've done. But we do have some resources that we go to when we're looking for something specific. A lot of online companies are kind of becoming the go-to now to find those really specific, rich fabrics. Sometimes we paint our own. It's the digital age. Some people are printing. And I think that's in the future for us to find a moment where we can print our own fabric or make our own textile.
And color also, especially for that period, is all natural-based dyes. And I love some of the color names. A goose turd green is one that always stands out for me. Do you try and adhere to also the traditional colors and treatments of the fabrics?
Sometimes. You know, I think we're definitely trying to use color to tell us about character or station. So we'll definitely use reds and rich purples and golds for royalty because that's what triggers in our head for royalty. So we definitely keep that in mind. And there's some color theory involved for sure, just with any character, you know, softer hues for our romantic characters and things like that.
And of course, anyone who's been paying attention to media lately knows that Cincinnati Shakespeare Company is moving into a new space in a couple of years. What does this mean for design?
Well, it's going to open up so many new doors to us. We have a very talented team that's working with us, and they have been dealing with our horizontal and vertical limitations, our lack of backstage space, our lack of wing space, and all of that's about to open up in 16, 17 months when we open the new theater. That means that what you're going to be able to see on stage is going to be that much more impressive. Those limitations are going to go away, and the way that our scenic designs are going to be able to explode, the way the lighting designs are going to be able to become more complex. And I would already say that costumes have been sort of outperforming our space. I'm sure that they're going to continue to do so, especially with more wing space and more opportunity for quick changes and wardrobe assist in the wings. So I think that if you've been to the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company and you're excited about what we've been doing, you're going to be even more excited to see how we do it even better in our new world-class facility.
Well, I'd like to thank our guests, Brian Isaac Phillips, Producing Artistic Director of the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company, and Amanda McGee, the resident costumer for the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
For more information on the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company and their final productions this season, Julius Caesar and Antony and Cleopatra, please be sure to visit our website at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. This is Jim Stump.
Not marble nor the gilded monuments of princes shall outlive this powerful rhyme, but you shall shine more bright in these contents than unswept stone besmeared with sluttish time. When wasteful war shall statues overturn and broils root out the work of masonry, nor Mars his sword nor war's quick fire shall burn the living record of your memory. Against death and all oblivious enmity shall you pace forth. Your praise shall still find room, even in the eyes of all posterity that wear this world out to the ending doom. So, till the judgment that yourself arise, you live in this and dwell in lovers' eyes.